He had believed that any day his mother would come for him, or the man she had written about, her friend, Mr. Stubbs, would drive by and take him away. But he had been waiting long months now. He would leave soon, he knew, if he had to make a way himself. The only thing Leighton could not reconcile with this joy of leaving Holly Springs was the gnawing feeling that his grandmother was not going. She did not want to go. She would shake her head and say,
"Son, I reckon the Lord know best what your grandma gwine do. He been keeping me here on this land now since for anything flying in the sky except the birds. You go on with your mama. You go to your mama up there in New York. Go on and finish school. Go in the army. Go to college. Get yourself some learning. Take care of your mama. You do that, and your grandma be happy."
Leighton always felt the trusted deep faith and nobility in her voice. Somehow his grandmother was bigger and stronger than the land. No matter how many factories they built nearby, or how many highways they proposed, or how many mines they dug, his grandmother's strength would last when the rest had crumbled to dust.
"We heard the water before we saw it. It was night, but this river was awake. We stood on the bank with barking behind us and roaring water in front.
It sounds like a hungry monster."
Ada likened everything to monsters and angels, but she was right. The water spilled downhill and grumbled like a belly waiting for food, its tongue licking this way and that as it turned and twisted toward the foggy swamp. Lord only knows what happened when it got there. But there was no time for worrying about that. If those dogs met us again, they weren't going to be any nicer. "Ada, you know that dream you have about flying?" I asked. Even with the dogs on our heels, her face was kind of happy that I'd remembered her dream. She nodded. "Well, now you get the chance to fly, like you did in that dream. We're gonna fly right off this riverbank." Ada considered.
"Into the water?"
she asked. I nodded. The sound of dog paws hitting soft ground came closer.
"But Homer, I can't swim."
She said it more with sadness than anything.
"That's all right. You can do it," I said. "But Homer, you can't swim," she said.
Before I had a chance to think about that fact, I grabbed Ada's hand and ran toward the riverbank and jumped.
In 1875, Woodrow Wilson's parents, after he had spent a year at Davidson College, sent him off to a school they had heard a lot about because of its Southern pedigree, the College of New Jersey, the school that would become Princeton University. Woodrow Wilson easily took to college life. He joined clubs and organizations. He honed a gift as a public speaker. His articles for the student newspaper were widely and favorably commented upon. Professors praised his serious approach to academic life. Wilson made friends with classmates who hailed from southern states, all bonding together over their history and hometowns. One of the people Wilson would have come across on campus was a gentleman by the name of Jimmy Johnson. Johnson began work at the school as a janitor in the 1840s and would remain there for 60 years, later also selling snacks at a makeshift stand on campus. Jimmy Johnson was a runaway slave from Maryland. He was ever mindful of trips that ranged too far from campus, nervous about bounty hunters and slave catchers. The runaway slave never met any black students at Princeton because they were not allowed. While on campus, Woodrow Wilson convinced himself he might prefer a career in law. He applied to the University of Virginia Law School and was accepted. Several years later, after undergoing an abbreviated law school stint and passing the bar exam, Wilson was settled in Atlanta and practicing law. But he felt his chosen profession boring and began imagining instead a career in public service or academia. To make that happen, he was advised to seek a doctoral degree. He applied and was accepted to Johns Hopkins University in Baltimore. He arrived on campus in 1883.